I'm Connie Dover, and you're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio. My name is Keith Brownio. Today, Jaws of Justice Radio opens a new chapter with the expansion to a weekly one-hour broadcast. Our guest this time will be Christy Childs of Veronica's Voice with new host Sunshine. Then some thank yous and a bit of a look back to how we got to this point. For those of you hoping to hear about the Jeanine Geiger Crisis Center, we apologize and promise to have them on in the near future. Keep tuned in for a whole hour. We will be doing our calendar in the middle of the show, and the 420 drug war news has been moved after our goodbyes. Up next is Christy and Sunshine.
Good morning. This is Sunshine. I'd like to introduce Christy Childs. She's from Veronica's Voice, a woman's shelter for prostitutes. And Christy, could you tell us something about your program this morning and tell us how you work with the ladies?
Sure. We have, unfortunately, we don't have a facility to house women. So we have our safe center. And what we do there is provide a safe space for women to come who are experiencing commercial sexual exploitation and the violence that comes along with that. And we provide case management, exit plan strategies. We do groups, different type of focus groups on different topics. We don't do a lot of trauma work based on the fact that we don't have the safe place to put the ladies for them to do the deep work that's needed to really be able to get to the root of the problem, because once they leave the safe center, they're going right back to the war zone. And unfortunately, we have not found enough support within this community to provide this type of safety for the women in need in our community.
Christy, I understand that you are in the process of trying to acquire a St. Paul Theology School down on Truman Road that will give you the space that you need to help the ladies, and I think that would be a very, very productive outlet for you to provide support for the women. It's also my understanding that sometime a few weeks ago that someone had misappropriated your vehicle and you no longer have a way to really facilitate the women getting to a safe space. Could you tell us what some of your needs are so that people in the community could provide you with some help if needed?
Sure. Yes, we actually had our van stolen, and the van is what we use, one, to do outreach, two, to provide transportation to and from the safe center for the women and girls in the community wanting our services, and as well as for them to get to and from different appointments that we provide case management to help them with. So we definitely need transportation to be able to do those things. As far as the seminary, we are in the process of negotiating out a 6-month extension to continue our due diligence and find other community nonprofits that are interested, and not even just nonprofits, but those that are wanting to be on the campus with us to provide kind of a one-stop shop for not only the clients that we would provide care for, but for the community surrounding the St. Paul Seminary in the neighborhood there.
I also noticed in your pamphlets that Veronica Voice is a restorative justice model. And for people in the community who are not familiar with the restorative justice concept, it's a community-based approach to dealing with crime, the effects of crime, and the prevention of crime. A restorative justice process operates from a belief that the path to justice lies in problem-solving and healing rather than in punitive isolation such as incarceration. We also noticed that you have a John School for the perpetrators of the prostitutes, the guys that get caught up in the judicial system who patronize the prostitutes. Could you give us some information about the John School, please?
I can. Okay. First of all, we have women that are court-ordered to our program. That is not by way of how all of the ladies come to our program, but our program costs us. We do not charge these women anything to access any of our services. The John School is for those that are the purchasers, the buyers that keep this this issue going. And we provide an 8-hour class on a Saturday. The funds that these men pay for that class go right back into Veronica's Voice to help provide the services that we give to the ladies.
That sounds like it would be a very productive source to not only inform the Johns, but to help the women who are subjected to these types of, disenfranchised citizens in the community. Prostitutes sometimes feel alienated, and that's their only choice. And it's my understanding that you have like a non-judgmental support service for the women and the girls that have been involved in sex work. You're the only organization in Kansas City that has a recovery program dedicated solely to the work of the commercial sex trade. I think a lot of times that the sex trade, they spend too much time and energy on the Johns and the pimps, and if they were to maybe take some of the federal and state money that's allocated to incarcerate and hunt down the pimps and spend it on the women, if there were no women to ply the trade, those men would be out of a job, or those people that, you know, patronize and prostitute the women, I think they'd have a harder time, you know, making it out there in the world without the women's money. Could you give us a little insight into some of the other non-judgmental type support that you serve to the women?
Sure. Well, myself being a survivor and coming from that background provides the ability to be non-judgmental, because I've walked in their shoes and walked in it for many years. So I understand what leads women into this dark, violent existence of survival. And I also want to kind of back up. When we're talking about this issue and the federal money that's allocated, the majority of that is allocated definitely to go after pimps, which is the smallest piece of this issue. We could take every pimp and lock them up, put them on an island somewhere where they could not get back to the mainland. The sad reality is there would still be more pimps to raise up, and we would still continue to pour money into the federal government, the Department of Justice, to go after these pimps, because if we're not going to do anything and do anything harsh enough for the buyers, because the buyers are the ones that keep this issue going. One prostituted person can see anywhere from 10 to 25 men a day. So that shows you, just with one prostituted person, we have 10 to 25 times the amount of buyers. There was a study just recently done, I think it was out last week, and in that study it said Kansas City is the second largest in demand in the United States. Well, I don't believe that study, because the study was done just based off of the ads on Backpage, so the internet prostitution that's happening. But so it was solely done off of that specific location. And we know in New York and other big cities, there's places you can walk into. There's places on the internet for escorts, all these other advertising locations. While Kansas City does have other advertising locations, which I won't mention because I'm not trying to lead people that direction, this was solely done off of Backpage. And what they were showing, what was shown in the Backpage reality of that study, was there was so much demand in Kansas City, men kept calling back because the demand, there obviously was not a large enough supply here in Kansas City to supply for the demand during that study that was done.
It's my understanding that you actually go out at night and you go down certain particular streets in the Kansas City area where the prostitutes are known to frequent and hide in the shadows and try to ply their trade and make the money to support themselves. A lot of ladies are out there trying to pay bills. Not everybody has drug addiction problems. Sometimes if you're out of work or something, you feel like that's your only outlet would be to go out there and prostitute yourself and put yourself in a terrible, terrible violent, sometimes violent situation. The human trafficking is a poverty issue.
Yes.
You know, most of the women that are out there are not self-sufficient, you know, have no means to gain gainful employment. They have very few skills. And when you have to feed your children and you feed yourself and have to have a roof over your head, sometimes you will catch yourself doing things that maybe you would not do in any other situation. So retraining and getting the prostitutes off of the corners and out of the trade is a very important service to the community. And I myself, I would like to thank you for going out there personally and trying to bring some of the ladies back into a better life. I would encourage the people in the communities where the prostitutes apply their trade, rather than being mean to them and rather than treating them as a second-class citizen, maybe to uplift them and help them in their own endeavors and be more non-judgmental. I also understand that through peer counseling, licensed therapists, the shelter, the food, the health care, the drug treatment, and the legal advocacy, there's such a great need for your funds to be increased. And we need to help these women. We need to get these people into a better life situation. And sometimes everyone has been on hard times, and a help up sometimes is one of the things that helps us, you know, go to a better life. I myself was not in the sex trade or anything, but I was a formerly incarcerated citizen. And without the help of family and friends and an education, I would never have been able to overcome the stigma of incarceration. And I appreciate the help that you do in the community. And is there anything else that, at this time, that you would like to say about your organization?
Well, on the issue, a lot of the ladies do use drugs. And we look at them as, oh, they're just drug addicts. They're using drugs to escape the reality of their existence. So they're trying to numb out, and this is a way to help them survive their existence and in their life of what they have to do.
I think that those women have a particularly hard time overcoming. There are drug dealers out there on the stroll with those ladies right behind them or helping them get to the Johns or where the money is so that the women can do what it is that they need to do to get the money. Then the money goes directly to the drug dealer. You know, they're supporting a non-productive lifestyle. And sometimes they're out there entirely too long, and no one takes care of them in any way, shape, or form. And my empathy is for the women who are out there, and I hope that you would call Veronica's Voice. Is there a crisis number or a number that the women can call?
Yes, we have a 24-hour crisis line, and that's 816-728-0004.
All right, and ladies, I would encourage any of you out there that happen to hear this morning, I would encourage you to call Ms. Childs. She has a very productive program. She's very empathetic to people's situations, having been there in her own lifestyle. She's been able to overcome it. She's an example of what can be done through positive initiative, and there is hope for all of you ladies out there. On the streets, I would encourage you all to reach out to anyone, social workers. There are people out there that will help you. It is my hope that the ladies in the streets will get off of the street and get into a better lifestyle, because it is possible. Being, like I said, a formerly incarcerated citizen, sometimes we run into roadblocks and stigmas that we think we cannot overcome. But the right hand up is what will make us overcome and be able to go ahead and extend our life to a better life, reunite our families. A lot of women I know have to reunite their families. You know, some women have been in very abusive relationships, and living on the streets is sometimes better than taking physical abuse. If there are any ladies out there, we would encourage you to call any number, crisis hotlines, to get off of the streets and into help where we can give you a better life. At this time, we'll have a short message, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Jaws of Justice radio program. I'm Sunshine, and this is my guest, Christy Childs. We're going to go back to some of the restorative justice questions. Maybe some of y'all are not familiar with restorative justice, but it's a peacemaking, and it tries to restore the community back to a very viable community. When you have less crime in your communities, when you have less people that are disenfranchised in your community, you will have a stronger community. And Christy, is there anything else that you would like for people to know about your organization? It's my understanding that you could be possibly looking for an office manager and some other volunteers to help you.
Sure. We are looking for someone to really manage the office. So we are going to be posting that soon. We also need volunteers that are interested in, of course, we get those volunteers that want to come in and do a project, but we really need volunteers that are really wanting to lock arms with us in our mission and join a committee, possibly get on the board of directors, and really pour into the organization with their time, gifts, and possibly if they have money. That would be helpful as well. But we have different committees that we're always looking to extend. And through getting more help on those. I would say that, back to the restorative justice thing, the whole thing with that is it's really where those who have caused harm give back to those that they've caused harm to. And I would like to see more of the Johns from Jackson County coming to my school. You know, the Jackson County Court, they do send the ladies to our program, which I explained earlier is free to them. We collect no funds from the city or from the women for those services. But yet, last year, we only had 23 Johns come to our John school, none of which were from Jackson County. But just to give you some of the numbers of what we deal with, we had 402 crisis calls. We had 188 new client intakes. We provided 60 women in different emergency shelters throughout the city. We gave out 343 outreach purses. We had 187 come through our commercial sexual exploitation program. And we had 545 either walk-ins or just a by-need basis that we provided emergency basic human needs to, such as shower, food, clothing. And yet we only had 23 in our John school. That is not even acceptable.
How could someone contact you? Would it be on your website? Would that be the best way to contact you, through the website?
They can contact through our website, which is in a process in the making. Okay. We're redoing all that, but it is up. We also, the best way to find us is on Facebook. We are constantly putting new information out there, not only what we're doing, but more information on prostitution and sex trafficking in the United States, which is our focus, is our own citizens, our citizens here on our city streets across America that are in need of care, in need of understanding, because for some reason we continue to try to separate sex trafficking from prostitution. In and of itself is causing harm to real people that deserve and need care and assistance in getting through the process of their traumas, their complex traumas, and moving forward with vocational training to provide them the skills needed to move forward into a healthier life.
Going back to the St. Paul's campus one more time, sure. Do you have extra activities that you would like to have on the St. Paul campus? Because that's a very spacious, it's a very beautiful campus.
It is.
You know, I think it would be uplifting to the women to be able to go to a place like that.
Yes. Well, we've discussed different type of possibilities with some of the space that is there. One would be a community garden. We would love to have a community garden there. Of course, Veronica's Voice will not be the only entity there on that.
You'll
huge
have other groups on campus.
Yes, that
yes
huge
okay
campus.
That'd be great.
So talked about a catering business. different things of that nature.
Yes. With the high school up the hill from the St. Paul campus, with East High School up there, and they have that farming program where they have the animals and stuff like that, I think that maybe there might be something you could work out with them to take some of their composting material to help them, you know, and bring it down the hill to the campus that you're coming to. I think that Veronica's Voice is a very, very helpful organization to the community, especially to the disenfranchised population of probably low-income, undereducated women, who most of which have children, have disenfranchised families, suffer from abuse issues. I would hope that some of the ladies out there would come to you and get the HIV and the STD testing, because I know that, you know, the communicable diseases are very rampant on the streets of Kansas City. I have people at the health department who tell me all the time that the HIV and the STD testing and stuff is completely free at the mm-hmm. health department. So they're, you know, they can walk in and be seen immediately. Everything is on a confidential basis. So anyone that needs that kind of stuff, there's a trauma recovery service. You have life skills training. They're able to express their creativeness when they come to you, rather than having to be subjected to keeping everything inside. You have a Youth Connect for the teens and the young adults. And then you also, I see it says you have exit planning for the clients with the risk reductions and going towards a better lifestyle.
And let me expand on that just for a moment, because people go, well, exit planning, what does that mean? And the sad reality is, here I am going in our 14th year at Veronica's Voice, and we're still doing exit planning. And what that is where those in prostitution have to prostitute themselves out of prostitution. And that's a very difficult thing to do, especially whenever you don't have a network of support from the community around you. So we do the best that we can through these exit plans. And I used what happened in my own life, which was an exit plan strategy, and I apply it and help these ladies to build their own exit plan. That is not the ideal situation. What needs to happen is we need to provide the safe place to live where these women do not have to prostitute themselves, where they can be there and they can work on their traumas. They can get to the root cause of why all these different manifestation of issues have been created in their lives, and then go into the vocational training and get a job that provides them a living wage, where they never have to compromise themselves sexually again to survive.
I noticed in the Trafficking Victims Protection Reauthorization Act of 2005 that the federal law defines American children under the age of 18 using commercial sex as the victims of sex trafficking. And every foreign national trafficked in the United States, there are 14 American citizens being victimized. The Department of Justice also, at the average age of prostitutes in America are 12 to 14 years old. However, I've noticed in Kansas City, we seem to have 18 and up seems to be the major people on the streets, because I have driven down the streets before and noticed in certain particular areas that there's a heavy prostitute.
Yes. The prostituted ladies here, when we do their history, we find they started much, much earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But what we see on the streets here are ladies definitely over the age of 18. And so while there's a lot of groups out there that are trying to start nonprofits, have started nonprofits just recently to help those domestic minor sex trafficking, or really known as CSEC, which is commercial sexual exploitation of a child. We do not see that on the streets of Kansas City. We do not see that through the ads that we're seeing here. So they're kind of creating a problem that I am unaware of.
And we'd like for people, you know, to be become sponsors of your organization. We'd like for people to donate in-kind gifts to you so that you can help, you know, continue to help these ladies. We would like to have volunteers. Stay educated about what's really going on in the streets of Kansas City when it pertains to prostitution, especially in disenfranchised neighborhoods. And if there's anything that anybody could do to help Veronica's Voice, we would encourage you all to help Veronica's Voice continue to help the women out there on the street who are disenfranchised and forced into prostitution without any hope. And the thing, when I came to your office last week and we had our initial interview and stuff, was that I was impressed at how your staff was running. They brought me in. They made me feel very welcomed. There was a little girl running around, and she seemed very happy. Her mother was there. Her mother seemed to be doing very well in that situation. So I've observed women at your program who seem to feel safe. You know, there's no one running around that hasn't had a meal. There's no one there trying to get out the door. They seemed like they were very at ease and that you made them feel very welcomed. And I'm sure that that is a very, very important part of their rehabilitation. Sometimes when someone cares about you, when you feel that no one else cares about you, and I would like to thank you for caring about the women that you have in your program, the little girl, I think, will have a better chance of growing up in a positive family with her mother than she would if her mother, you know, was forced to take her with her out onto the streets while she plied her trade. And I think that will go a long way to stopping a lot of the violence towards the women and the children and the disenfranchised of prostitutes in Kansas City. Do you have any final words for us?
I would love to direct everyone to our conference we're having. It's Demand Change Conference. This is our second one. It will be led by survivor leaders from around the United States. We will be not only educating the community, but really sticking holes in the myths and propaganda surrounding this issue and bringing forth the truth. We have, actually, you can go to our Facebook page, our website, to find out more about that, but it's going to be at UMKC, and it is October 26th, and we would love to get the community out, to get them educated. There is a fee, of course. It cost us money to get these people flown in here and get them in a hotel, but you're not going to get this many survivor leaders at one conference that are going to be honest, truthful, and expose the reality of what this is.
I'd like to thank Ms. Childs for coming in this morning and giving us some insight to what her and her organization do. I would like to ask everyone to continue to listen to the Jaws of Justice program on Mondays between 9 and 10 a.m. since we're expanded to an hour. And up next, we have our calendar of events. This is Sunshine, and we'll talk to you the next time.
Somebody that just loves to learn, and another child grows up to be somebody you just love to burn. Mom loves.
My name is Keith Brownhill, and this is the calendar for September 9th, 2013. The Niles Home for Children will be holding their Homecoming Through the Decades fundraiser Saturday, September 21st, beginning at 7 p.m. in the Tower Club at Arrowhead Stadium. This year, Niles will be honoring Steve Rowland for his work in the field of health care and his contributions to the health and the well-being of children and families. To purchase tickets, go to www.nileshomekc.org. Then click on the donate button and specify tickets under purpose. For information on sponsorship and more, contact Melissa at mtaylor@nileshomekc.org. The fourth annual reentry conference will be held October 4th, 2013 at the New Summit Church, 1800 Northeast Independence Avenue, Lee Summit, Missouri. Pre-registration forms are due September 4th. For registrations and information, contact Lisa Wiseman, probation and parole, at 816-322-1166, extension 236. Man Up Monday's mentoring program is looking for volunteers to help mentor the young men of Hogan Prep Academy High School. Mentoring sessions will be held on Mondays from 2:45 to 3:45 p.m. at Hogan Prep Academy High School, 1221 East Myers Boulevard, Kansas City, Missouri, 64131. Mentoring begins September 9th. Subjects include the following: Dress to Impress, Life Planning, Mock Interviews, Life Skills. For more information, please contact Raphael Frazier, M-3A, 816-447-8568. Join Representative Brandon Ellington in an open discussion on the upcoming veto session in the Missouri Legislature, Crime, Education, and Economic Development. This event will be held Tuesday, September 10th, 7 p.m. at the Robert J. Mohart Multipurpose Center, 3200 Wayne, Kansas City, Missouri, formerly the Linwood Multipurpose Center. My name is Keith Brownier, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice page on KKFI website, kkfi.org.
Jaws of Justice Radio was first broadcast on October 29, 2009. That broadcast was preceded by almost a year and a half of discussion and planning by a group of folks from all walks of life. When we first started, we would broadcast 1 hour a month on the Thursday night special. But that proved to be difficult to keep our volunteers involved, as it would sometimes be months between their contributions. And we soon went to broadcasting 1 half hour twice a month. Then in February of 2012, Jaws of Justice Radio earned a regular spot on the schedule at 9 a.m. Monday mornings. Earlier this year, we broadcast our 100th show, and now we expand to a one-hour show once again. I thought it would be fitting to let you hear some of the voices that have spoken for and to our listeners. I want to thank each and every one of them for their hard work and remind our listeners that there is a space on the airwaves for your voice, too. Come join us. Get involved in trying to make this world, our country, and community a better place to live. Now let's hear some of those voices in the wilderness.
Hello, Jaws of Justice listeners. My name is Lee Moore, and I am on the air with Ralph Dwayne Hooker. Although I'm not extremely well acquainted with Ralph, he and I do share something in common. He is my biological brother, and we share the same father. I didn't grow up with him because I was given up for adoption when I was approximately 1 year old, but he and I are becoming acquainted. Nonetheless, Jaws of Justice's purpose in interviewing Ralph Dwayne Hooker is to examine the tests, trials, and successes of a recently released inmate. We will find out a bit of background information on Ralph Hooker today, his thoughts about the American penal system, get an idea of his future aspirations, and then keep track of his progress as he re-enters American society.
Hello, this is Margot Patterson with Jaws of Justice Radio. Our subject today is the treatment of juveniles in our nation's prisons, and specifically the sentence of life without parole given for some crimes committed by juvenile offenders. In June of this year, the Supreme Court ruled that mandatory sentences of life without parole for juvenile offenders could no longer be imposed, that some consideration had to be given to an offender's age, family background, history of mental illness, etc., in sentencing. just to be clear, this does not mean that courts cannot sentence juvenile offenders to life without parole. It just means that they cannot do so automatically. We're talking today to John T. Lash. John is a regular contributor to the Juvenile Justice Information Exchange. That's an initiative of the Center for Sustainable Journalism at Kennesaw State University in Georgia. John is also a program director of the Georgia Conflict Center, and he is himself a former offender.
Good morning. You're listening to Jaws of Justice Radio on KKFI 90.1 FM Community Radio. This is Robin Martinez. I'm a lawyer with Martinez, Madrigal, and Machacow, and I'm a member of the Kansas City chapter of the National Lawyers Guild. This morning on Jaws of Justice, we're going to talk about juries, serving on juries, and the process of selecting juries. With me today, I have Mark Andrus. Mark has the experience of having recently served on a jury in a murder case. Also with me is Eric Vernon, a criminal defense lawyer here in the Kansas City metropolitan area, who's done a lot of jury trials and is here to provide some insight in how the jury selection process works and what some of his experiences are in selecting juries.
Hi, I'm Jay Renee with the Jobs of Justice program. Tonight we're here with Clark Stewart, Director of Operations from Stop Child Trafficking Now, and Jennifer Newman, the Kansas City Ambassador for the Stop Child Trafficking Now.
Good morning. Welcome to this edition of Jaws of Justice. I'm your host, Melvin Merritt, right here on KKFI 90.1 on your dial. This morning I will be talking with Mr. Ron MacAndrews. He is the former warden of one of the, if not the toughest prison in the country. He will be sharing with us his experience while being warden in the Florida State Penitentiary.
Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio. This is Peter Hoffman of the National Lawyers Guild. Today I'm interviewing director Kevin Bryce about his new film, We Are Superman. Truce Avenue has historically been a racial and economic dividing line in Kansas City, but there is a movement to erase that divide. On 31st and Truce, there is a community of people who have stopped waiting on Superman. They have a vision to transform the dividing line of Truce Avenue into a gathering place. We Are Superman is the story of their work, their vision, and how one corner is transforming a city.
Hi. Today I'm honored to have Richard Wexler, the Executive Director of the National Coalition for Child Protection and Reform, and the author of Wounded Innocence, a very powerful book about the real victims of the war against child abuse.
Attention, attention. This is a message in a bottle to the men and women who are lost at sea.
You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. My name is Chief Brown Eel. And this is the program we call Jaws of Justice Radio.
And my name is Keith Brownie. Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio. Alcohol consumption is big business in America. It produces well over $100 billion a year. But it also can and usually does produce a very long list of serious and deadly complications. Among these are cirrhosis of the liver, pancreatitis, epilepsy, polyneuropathy, alcoholic dementia, heart disease, pelvic ulcers, malnutrition, sexual dysfunction, cardiovascular disease, malabsorption, alcohol, liver disease, fetal alcohol syndrome, cancer of the mouth, esophagus, throat, liver, and breast, alcohol poisoning, HIV, and other sexually transmitted diseases due to impaired judgment. In addition to this, every 22 minutes, someone dies in an alcohol-related crash, amounting to more than 105,000 deaths annually. 34% of all murders in the U.S., one half of all rapes, 60% of all other violent crimes, 30% of all suicides, 80% of all fires and drowning accidents are all alcohol-related. Every year, Missouri loses hundreds of thousands of dollars that could otherwise be receiving from the federal government for highway construction, road repairs, simply because it will not pass an open container liquor law. None of this includes the cost of treating these diseases or the prosecution for alcohol-related offenses. Fortunately, I have two guests here in the studio with me in the studio this morning who can tell you a lot more about these things than I can. They are Mr. Gordon Stubblefield and Ms. Molly O'Neill.
Hello, I'm James Boyd. I'm interviewing local attorney David Bell with Warsh, Hobbs & Meraki. We're going to be talking about stand your ground laws. David, could you summarize for us the stand your ground laws and when they originated?
Sure. The stand your ground laws, I know the one we're going to talk about today in particular, I believe during a pre-show discussion we talked about in 2005, I think, indicated in Florida. And basically what the stand your ground law says is that you have no obligation to retreat anywhere you're legally permitted to be. And so in those situations, if confronted, you have the right to stand your ground and to use force.
This is Jeff Humfeld, and Lee Moore is supposed to be here, but I imagine the bus is running a little bit slow, and he hasn't quite gotten here yet, so I'm sitting in for him. And our guest today is Eric Leonard West, Kansas City, Missouri Public Schools School Board Chair. And we're going to talk a little bit about a report that came out earlier in, last year, about how the school district is actually doing better and getting closer, hopefully, to accreditation. Again, welcome to Jaws of Justice, Eric.
Good morning, and welcome to Jaws of Justice, Radio 90.1 in Kansas City. My guest today is Kirsten Tynan. Her topic will be concerning fully informed juries in our court system.
Good evening, and thank you for being with us on this commemoration of Alvin Curtsey Bay. My name is Macy Jones, and I have with me Keith, and also I have Alvin present. And what I like to do to start off this show is let you hear Alvin's opinion concerning a few things. Can we tone Alvin up?
But you think about this, I think about this. When I went into prison with a life sentence plus 225 years connected to it consecutively, my attitude was, okay, where we at now? Because whatever it is what it is, because you stuck me here. I'm probably going to die here, and I'm ready for that. So let's get that out of the way. And I'm not trying to hear this thing called rehabilitation. How do you rehabilitate a man that's serving a life sentence? But then you do not. The system does not rehabilitate. As I suggested previously about keeping your heads in the books, keeping your brain alive, staying focused on what is really going on in life, learning about yourself first and foremost, learn about your own potential, your own capacity to succeed, your own capacity to make and mar your fortune. That's what survival is about. That's what survival was about for me. I stayed in the library. I kept a stack of books in front of me, and I rigorously sought to keep my physical form together.
Now, Alvin talked about, Keith, Alvin talked about surviving in prison and the things that were necessary for him to survive in prison. And I know you, as well as myself, was there with Alvin. So we know that you have to have a lot of things that you have to take care of and do. But what was your concept of Alvin while he was incarcerated?
Well, my concept of Alvin was a person that you could always count on for support and, some insight into various things. Alvin had a distinct way of looking at things from a perspective that other people were apparently unable to view. And I frequently sought him out when I had problems that were perplexing. And I would ask his opinion on things, and he was always forthcoming with it.
Good morning. This is Trishelle, and I'm here with Brandon Ellington this morning. Mr. Ellington, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing today?
I'm doing just fine. It's good to see you in the house this morning. I understand that you have a lot of activity that's been going on lately. I understand that the veto session is coming up. You've been doing some community classes are being held, and then you have an event that's coming up. Where are we going to start with you at this morning, Mr. Ellington?
This is KKFI 90.1 FM, Kansas City Community Radio. Welcome to today's edition of the Jaws of Justice show. My name is Michelle Dotson. On tonight's show, we will start off with our guest speaker, Ms. Vera Thomas. She is the mother of death row inmate Reggie Clements, talking about her son's case and the injustice that was done. During the second part of tonight's show, we will listen to a pre-recorded interview that we did with Reggie Clements himself, where he will tell us about what his life is like on death row.
Good evening. I'm Jessica Thomas. And tonight on Jaws of Justice, we as a community begin the discussion on ending the war on drugs. Is it appropriate to target and imprison all users, low-level dealers, and distributors as we pursue violent gangs and cartels while ignoring the banks that benefit from the money they launder? After 40 years, the United States war on drugs has cost $1 trillion and hundreds of thousands of lives. And for what? Drug use is as rampant and violence even more brutal and widespread. Even U.S. drug czar Gil Kerlouowski concedes that strategy hasn't worked. President Obama promised to reduce drug use and the great damage it causes with a new national policy that he said treats drug use more as a public health issue and focuses on prevention and treatment. Nevertheless, his administration has increased spending on interdiction and law enforcement to record levels, both in dollars and in percentage terms. This year, they account for $10 billion of his $15.5 billion drug control budget. Narcotics addiction is a problem which afflicts both the body and soul of America. Obama's drug czar, former Seattle Police Chief Gil Kerlouowski, made a splash last year when he declared a rhetorical end to the war on drugs. He panned the phrase itself, if not the full set of ideas behind it. "We're not at war with the people of this country," he declares. And Kerlouowski is billing the strategy as a move toward putting public health on equal footing with criminal justice. It's a disease, it's diagnosable, and it's certainly something that can be treated, but it's not a war. You can't arrest your way out of the problem. I would like to welcome into the studio Gary Johnson.
Hello, this is Sister G, and today's show will be about Reggie Clements, who has found himself now on death row in Missouri for over 20 years. He keeps on insisting on his innocence, and he has struggled to find justice before it's too late. Greg Lubeau, a local criminal defense attorney who works with the local Amnesty International chapter, will be here, along with Ernest Coverson and Jamala Rogers, who is with the Justice for Reggie campaign in St. Louis.
Those were some of the voices that you've heard over the years. There were some voices that you did not hear, and some that you will not hear again. Two of our number have passed on. Alvin Kirksey Bay was in some ways the soul of Jaws of Justice Radio. And Harriet Keeney, a friend I grew up with, and was a crusader for justice and her own brother's cause. Others who made Jaws of Justice possible are Infinity Foster, Robin Belcher and her mother, Carl Rodney, our conscience, Susan Haslam, and many others who have lent their time and energy over the years. But a very special thank you is due to Sister G, the heart of Jaws of Justice Radio, who inspired, pushed, and prodded this project from the beginning and was our engineer at the beginning. Thank you all, and let us know, and thank you, our listeners, and let us know if you want to get involved. Send us an email at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com or call and leave a message at KKFI 816-931-3122. Keep listening. There are some very interesting stories to be told yet. And with me, my name is Jeff Humfeld, and with me here is Keith Brown Ill. And Keith, you have a particular story. What do you think has been, you know, the thing that you've gained the most out of being part of this experiment, so to say?
Well, I, first of all, I have to say it's self-gratification because I've always wanted to be in some kind of situation where I could be a voice for people who don't have a voice to speak. And I have received a lot of letters and phone calls from people who have congratulated me and thanked me for the work that I'm doing here at Jaws of Justice Radio. And on a more personal level, Jaws of Justice have helped me complete the process of my rehabilitation. Being a former incarcerated citizen myself, I needed to find myself involved in things that kept me out of the environments that got me in trouble in the first place. And, you know, being involved in the work here at Jaws of Justice, it gave me a broader perspective on a lot of things that have an impact on people like myself. And I try to bring those stories to other people so that they can be made aware of them and possibly make that same transition that I have made.
Well, I want to remind everyone that this is Jaws of Justice Radio. We want to thank everyone for listening in today. And now we're going to go to our outro. And after that is over, you will hear the 420 Drug War News.
Ready? One, two, three. What am I gonna do now? Am I gonna make it? Some way, somehow. Well, maybe I'm not supposed to know. Maybe I'm supposed to cry. If nobody ever knows the way I feel, that's alright, that's okay, cause I'm gonna
make
my world
a better place.
Gonna keep
that smile
on
my face.
Yeah, I'm gonna teach.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. To find the link to audio of today's show, our calendar of events, and more, check out Jaws of Justice Radio on Facebook. To contact us, send an email to JawsOfJusticeRadio@yahoo.com. And to find out about future shows, check us out on KKFI's website, kkfi.org. My name is Jeff Humfeld. We thank our engineers, Joe Henderson and Mike Murphy, host of the Wednesday Morning Buzz. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Tell Somebody with Tom Clammer on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Friday. Up next is Beautician's Blues with Luscious Lynn, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Hogue. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon, and Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Then, round out your day with the spicy Latin sounds of Sabor Latino and Fiesta Musical. Today's outro theme music is Better Man from the Playing for Change Songs Around the World CD.
I'm gonna get back up. It'll be alright. It'll be okay. Well, I'm gonna make
my world
a better place. Go keep
that smile
on
my face.
Go teach
myself how to understand.
Go make myself a better man. Yeah, I'm gonna make my world a better place.
It's the 420 Drug War News. Today, September 9, marks 30 years that Mr. George Mortarano has been behind federal lockup for the crime of possessing too much marijuana.
Yes, sir, George, if you will, tell my listeners how you wound up where you are.
Well, basically, I put myself here. I'm a nonviolent, I'm the longest nonviolent first offender serving time in federal prison, in the federal prison system, possibly the United States. And I have no other prison record at all. And actually, my years of criminal activity were less than three for marijuana. And I pled guilty to the defense, assuming that I was going to get 10 years. But at the time, there was a lot of political rhetoric going on in Philadelphia, and I fell right into it. And instead of getting the 10 years, I was sentenced to life, no parole, the fourth person in America at that time, and the first person ever in the state of Pennsylvania. And upon getting that sentence, after spending a year in solitary, getting the sentence, I thought that I would finally go to an institution where I would be in population. Instead, I was sent to the most severe prison in America. A federal prison had the offer, and that was Marion. And I wrote a little bit about that. It's called Of Words and Walls. I'll read the first few sentences. It was for Professor Ian Ross, who writes a lot on prison penology in America. And I quote, "No one knows what goes on in the body under the skin when sentenced to die within walls. I know. I was sentenced twice to come home in a body bag." Now, Dean, the reason I was sentenced twice is because I had the sentence vacated in 1986. But I was unfortunate to get in front of the same judge. And his AKA was Hanging High Hannum, who is now deceased. And also there was a lot of media on him at the time due to the fact that while I was fighting for my life in court, my then lawyer, Robert Simone, was indicted by the IRS and facing 20 years in prison. Well, I didn't know during his trial his main character witness was going to be my judge.
We'll have part two on tomorrow's report. Meantime, go to WeBelieveGroup.com, DeanBeckerDrugTruth.net.